Tom Doyle Masterclass brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you can see, Patrick isn't here.
Again. How would they see that?
Yeah, well,
as you can
on
hear,
the video
perhaps.
Cast. Oh, okay.
Do you want me to video cast? I'll get the phone out and then we can Facebook Live it.
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you can hear, Patrick isn't here. I'm Frosty. I'm joined by Cam and Dave.
Hello.
Good evening.
And I guess we're just going to kick off straight into the Knicks, shall we?
Yeah.
Sure. Get the paint. It's ripping the Band-Aid off. So. Yeah. How much hair is on that Band-Aid?
I mean, the first half was quite good.
40 minutes. I'll give you the first 40 minutes.
I would have said 30, but yeah.
Football,
yep.
And it looked like we could get a result out of that game.
Yep.
That's all I have to say about the game.
Yep.
After that, it looked quite the opposite.
So let's kick off with what Rudin said. He seemed to think that was the best we'd played all season. I tend to agree with him.
Yep. The first 40 minutes... I would agree with you.
Yep. As a 90 as a whole, I would say.
I disagree. I think we were better against Newcastle. But I would have put that first 40 minutes as a performance as the best we played this season. But as a 90-minute performance, it wasn't anywhere near the best we'd done this season. Not even close.
So there was the changed formation.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't really see that from where I was. So can you run through exactly what it looked like from where you guys were?
Well, it looked like a back five. Copper just dropping straight in between Taylor and Durante.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much the whole first half.
Yep.
With very defensive wing backs.
Yep.
In fact, they were just full backs. We were playing a literal five at the back.
So it's kind of like a 5-1-2 with two wide strikers?
No, I kind of saw it more as a 5-2-0-3.
Far out.
Yeah, well, when they put the formation out, I thought for the first time this season we've put out the actual formation we're going to play, and it was a 4-3-3. But then Kopchinski definitely dropped in deeper than that would imply. And he wasn't always in there, so we did push up into the midfield a bit as well, but he definitely was pushing in as a third centre-back most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't your traditional 4-3-3 by any stretch of the imagination, because most of the time we were sitting in a back five back there. But it meant your back four were playing like a four, just with an extra centre back who was there 70-80% of the time.
So is it more like he was dropping back in when we were defending and then pushing forward slightly when we were on the ball to provide an outlet?
Yeah, I think that was the intent, but I think he'd been told to be particularly defensive-minded. So he was even dropping in when we were in transition, he was still very deep, I
guess. Yeah, I got the impression it was basically he was a centre-back on defence, and then he would move forward towards where a defensive midfielder would play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was almost an outlet.
Fair enough.
So we could go wide or central, and we could
Mundy and I think it was Rufo would then push forward further forward to support.
They could either push forward or wider to just kind of give more options, but it didn't really ever eventuate as far as that transition. I don't think we got any kind of ball forward in short passes. They tended to be very long passes from what I remember.
The short pass game isn't really what we're about this season. Obviously, it's the second fullback option rather than the first go-to option, with that first go-to option being those wide balls long to strikers
and
wingbacks.
Yeah, this is where it worries me, because we've got three guys up front who do not play well back to goal. And so we're putting a lot of ball up to them. And, let's face it, they're all armpit height. They're not winning headers. So you've got to try and get it along the ground without getting it near one of the opposition midfielders.
It kind of feels like we're playing for set pieces in those situations, because we do have some timber at the back, obviously, who come forward for those free kicks or for those set pieces. It looks like perhaps because the guys are quick and small, they just have to get in front of the guy with the ball to earn a free kick and perhaps give us an opportunity. And we have scored. So we've scored three goals now, and two of them have been from set pieces, and one of them was a penalty. So perhaps that's what the tactic would be, rather than trying to play those long balls to head, because we're not winning them to head. If we're trying to play them in, to get us in a position to win free kicks where you've got that quick guy nipping in, that could be his tactic.
So mind that there's a bit of a weakness in that.
I think there's a big weakness in that. I'm just saying this is what it looks like.
Well, no, just the fact that if we're playing for set piece, we have no variation. Zero. Our corners are always sliced to the beyond the back post, headed back in. It's, I mean, I was literally calling it out before they even did it. It was, yeah.
And you can also pick that Taylor's going to be the man back there.
No, it's either Taylor or Dura.
Yep.
It's one of those two guys.
The two times.
Because no one else can win a header.
Yeah. Because those are the two guys with the timber that we have. I'd say I'd put Doyle there as well.
Our strikers are, yeah, Doyle when he's up there, but you're not pushing all three of those forward every time necessarily.
No,
probably
not.
Of those three, at least one of them staying back. So the two are up there. But
it's always
you, you've talked about our strikers. They're not winning headers. They're little guys. They're fast. So they're not the guys you're expecting to win the headers. So you've got to ask the big defenders to come up and do the job for that. Mm-hmm. And we know certainly from Dura, he's not exactly the man who's scoring with his head all the time. So the thing you can ask him to do, though, is head it back across. I think Taylor probably could score with his head. That could be an option, you know, shooting at the back post there. But clearly the tactic is those guys back post and back across.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which in itself isn't a bad tactic, but if it's the only tactic, then we need to...
If you're talking about us trying to play for set pieces, though, I do have a concern about that, that we have, as you say, one variation on those set pieces. If it's the variation we use reasonably consistently when we win corners, that's kind of okay, because it's not like we win a lot of corners. It's not like traditional Phoenix have scored a lot of goals from corners. You know, that's not where we've won games. I don't mind that he hasn't gone, oh, we're now going to try and win games from corners, because it would be nice to get more production than we do there, but we've done all right in the past without good corners, so it's not a be-all and end-all. But if we're playing for free kicks and corners, we need a better option there, sure.
Well, the Moneyball stats suggest that corners are actually above average for getting results out of it.
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah, but that's the best corner you can do. Again, Moneyball stats is an inswinging corner to the near post and head across the goal. That's the best way to score from that. I don't know, mate. It's just a spitballing an idea, because I can't see there being another reason for persisting with the tactic that we are persisting with. If you've got five guys playing and two defensive guys, so seven guys playing in your defensive third, once you gain possession, holding possession shouldn't actually be that difficult, because you've got a fair few outlets there. Yes, you're still going to struggle to create. Yes, you're still going to struggle to go forward. But we're struggling to go forward when we break fast anyway, because we're not getting the ball to the players that we need to get it to. So, I don't know, it just feels a little limited at the moment.
I think part of the issue is, as you say, we're playing seven at the back. And if the opposition aren't going to try and press us, which most aren't, because why would you?
Yeah.
It means that they can man mark all three of our attacking players, and they can play players in front of them to cut off those passes to feet.
Exactly. So going fast isn't going to work.
No.
So hold the ball and try and give yourself a chance to build up the play, just as an alternate option. Like, again, going long isn't a problem. It's like he's trying to compress the defensive lines early in the game to create a bit more space deeper for us when we do break out with the ball at feet. But because we're giving the ball away so quickly when we break fast, it's just the benefits of compressing those lines just isn't eventuating at all.
Yep. I mean, we're talking a lot like we've been using the same tactics for a while. I think this was the first time we saw us actually try something different. I mean, playing three up front like that is different.
Yep.
The five we were playing at the back, the 4/5 we were playing at the back, was certainly different. And it looked like it worked for a decent amount of time. The problem remains, when it didn't continue to work, everything turned to complete shit. You know, we had a goal. You could argue maybe not a deserved lead, but we were right in that game. I think if it had got, you know, going in at 1-1 at halftime actually wasn't an unfair reflection on the game. But then, you know, it just didn't work at all in the second half, and we had no other option. I think the problem continues to be, we go out there with a tactic, and whether or not it works, we have no ability to change it on the fly during the 90 minutes. And that's a real problem for us, that whatever changes we do make, whether it be personnel or slight shifts in formation, seem to be really killing us at the moment.
So let's go back to that goal. It actually was resulting from a set piece.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The ball has come out to the top of the box, and Mundy's, I think, done exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Ball's bounced up to him. He's hit it on the volley, on the side foot, and just got well over the top of it. He's bounced it into the ground,
yeah.
Got enough on it, and beaten the keeper. I thought he did
Yeah, I think it's a really good goal. I think he's a little lucky in some ways that it does get through the traffic the way it does, but he's intended to do that, and it's happened exactly the way it happened in his head, basically.
The way he got his foot and was basically getting over the top of it to angle it straight down. He was always going to hit it on that line. It was just a question of whether he was going to bounce it over the post, the crossbar, or it was going to go in.
It's definitely a contender for goal of the season thus far.
Oh, Cameron.
Yep. Yeah. It was nicely taken goal.
Yeah.
It's good to see him actually get a goal. I mean, I don't recall him having many shots even. I don't think he's ever really been in position to get one.
I can't recall one at all. I certainly don't. But again, not what he's there for. The fact that he did pick up one, that's great.
Yeah, I think as the defensive midfielder, you'd expect him to pick up a couple and get off a couple of shots. Mm. But, you know, which is what he's done, I think.
Yeah. But I think that's right. I think you're looking at the way we're set up this season. We're expecting a lot of the squad to chip in with at least a couple. Obviously, his primary purpose is not scoring goals, but you're expecting him to get a few across the season. If he comes away with zero for the season, I think they would be saying that was disappointing in terms of that.
But for a defensive midfielder, if he gets two, I'd be saying, champion, perfect. Well done, mate. You make your tackles and you get two goals a season.
Perfect.
Thanks.
But we're not really making those tackles, are we?
Well, he's chasing shadows a lot, I think. And that the space that we provide in that central midfield area is really gives opposition teams chance to make hay while the sun shines. There's only him and Rufa in there trying to shut down space, and any kind of 1-2 gets straight past them. You know, that's the way of a proper sized field in football.
Yeah, defensive transition is our biggest issue. I think that's the biggest issue. When we're doing three at the back, there was space on the wings and they were exploiting that. When we're doing five at the back, there's space in central midfield, they were exploiting that. And they found it quickly, and they've done what a professional football team should do with that. I'm feeling a little down about the whole scenario, because there's obviously, when you look at that first 40 minutes, there's something there that could work and certainly hold your own. But then the next 50 minutes were just so poor. Once we went three goals down, Adelaide didn't have to try, but they still could have scored more. It just makes people a bit down about how things have gone the last 3 weeks.
The fascinating thing about it as well is if you actually look at the stats across the whole 90 minutes, we're pretty even on almost every single stat. Possession, we're actually slightly ahead. Passing accuracy, completed passes, tackles, fouls, cards, all of that is extremely shots, shots on target, block shots, all of that is extremely even. The only stat that's really lopsided is interceptions, where they absolutely smoked us. I think it was they made 19 and we made 5 interceptions. And I think that's a symptom of those long balls we were playing that they were cutting out. But whether that's a reflection on them being better or us trying a tactic that wasn't working, you can argue to the cows come home. But actually, across the 90 minutes, we were pretty equal. So that tells you how well we were doing in that 40 minutes. Because clearly, as you say, the next 50, we were very poor. So if you were to take those stats at 40 minutes, I think they probably would have shown us even more ahead than it kind of felt like. It certainly felt like we were well in the game, but I wouldn't have said it felt like we were dominating the hell out of it.
No, I thought we were the better team.
I suspect that the stats at that point might well have been saying we were dominating quite heavily.
Now, even considering that late goal in the first half, I was still positive going into the sheds. I actually thought, we've done really well in this game. We are the better team, again, not dominant by any stretch of the imagination, but definitely the better side of the two that were out there. The fact that it fell apart so badly in the second half was actually quite a shock.
I mean, for me, where we get hit badly regarding your intercepts is not the ones that we're hitting long from, Curto or from the back five, because we tend to be set, and that's fine. It's in the transition where we're turning over the ball in the middle third or their third, where we're spread, and I've noticed the last few games, it's like when the opposition gets a chance to have their midfield run at our back five with depth and really can run at them at pace, as soon as you see that, you can just feel the fever just going, oh no, here we go. And it's like, so everyone obviously realises that that's the danger spot for us. It isn't when our back line is set and we've just lumped the ball up and it's, the ball's been just given straight to their back five, back four or whoever. It just seems to be in transition, in deep transition, that we get really, really badly rolled. And so I guess that kind of comes in nicely to their second goal.
Well, I was going to say, we should probably talk about that first one. That was an exceptionally good finish from Doyle.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. Curto had no chance at all.
I really didn't want to do it just because I'm going to stick the boot in. Yeah. It's like, what in the fuck was he thinking?
Yeah.
Honestly, he's got the right idea. Basically, just the simple header. Don't try and glance it. Just hit it with the front of your head. But aim it a hell of a lot further away from the goal. Don't be putting it just past the post. Don't be aiming just past the post. Nail it.
The safest option on that ever is to go back the way it's come.
Exactly.
Just hit it. If you've got nothing else, hit it straight back the way it's come. And, you know, you're not necessarily going to clear the pressure, but you're going to clear that opportunity. And so be it. If it comes back in, it comes back in. But there's certainly...
Towards the corner. And it.
Yeah, and it's... To be honest, it was just poorly executed more than anything else. You can see he's trying to whip it away. It's just a poorly executed header. That does happen. Mistakes like that happen. You can forgive those because, to be fair, it was a stunning own goal. It's gone right into the top corner.
Well, let's be honest. Curto's been good enough that's the way he's going to get beaten.
Yeah.
Is you're going to have to get a good shot on.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we've had quite a few this season. I mean... Yeah, the
second one. Yeah, well, the second goal in that Adelaide game, that was a lovely goal.
Yeah,
that was a really, really nicely taken, really well worked goal. I don't know who this guy was, but obviously the whipped crossing from the right gets in between two defenders really well, heads it down into the corner again. Curto, no chance at all. And that was actually brutal, that one, because coming at like dead on 48 minutes after we'd had such a good half and effectively conceding in the 45th and 48th, it was harsh, well harsh on us.
That was the one that Copper was... It went over his head by a good couple of inches, wasn't it?
I was down the other end and I haven't seen the...
I'm pretty sure that it was that one rather than the second Doyle own goal.
I don't remember that second Doyle own goal. I don't remember it being a Doyle own goal.
No, yeah, that's right. Doyle own goal was got tangled up on his feet. So it was definitely this one. It went over the top of Copper, but I guess not being a centre back, he's not thinking, I just have to get something on it, put the guy off behind me. He's just kind of gone, it's over my head. I can't get much on it. I won't. And unfortunately, it's fallen for their striker, and he's nailed a good head on it.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily a central defender's attitude that would go towards a ball, because the central defender's going, I've got to get something on it.
Just get anything on it.
Yeah, because then it's just enough to put the striker off. It doesn't exactly have to be a lot. Yeah. Oh, well. So describe to me the third goal. I can't, down the other end, don't remember it being a Doyle own goal. So
it gets tangled in his feet and he just rolls it into his own net, basically.
Yeah, there was a tangle of feet between him and the opposition striker, and... I think it got called for the opposition striker, but it looked like it came off Doyle's legs twice in there as well.
Okay. Maybe we'd give it to the opposition striker in this situation.
That's how it's gone down officially.
Okay, that's
but
good.
You watch the goal and go, oh, Doyle's got a lot on that, and then it's in his own net. I think there's a bit of striker there as well, but as a defender, you get that much of a touch on the ball, it should be going well clear.
Yeah, again, it felt like he should have been... It looked like he was trying to get his left boot on it when his right boot was there, so he's just trying to stagger his feet a little bit to try and balance himself and get his left, when he should have just gone, screw it, and stuck his right through it.
Yeah,
and
he gets caught in an awkward body position and slightly off balance, and from there it just doesn't go well.
It just feels like he should have just thrown his right boot through it, and if it screwed off the right foot and went in, that's unlucky, but...
And he's already had one of those in the game. I can understand why he was apprehensive about doing something.
Well, that was
like
the problem, is he didn't get anything on it, really. It hit him and bobbled about. So he's unfortunately not had the best game.
That was game over, to be fair. From there, Adelaide didn't need to chase it, but they still could have caught it, so they had good chances late to score a couple more.
That's it, because we were pushing.
Yeah, very, very much so.
And again, that turnover, middle third.
Yeah.
Curto, good again?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, player of the game. I can understand it. He's so consistent. Yes, he does love a punch, but he's good at punching. He commands his area. He comes when he needs to. He stays when he needs to. His decision making is solid. I don't feel like there's a howler there. You know what I mean? I say if they score the goals, it's not going to be because of the keeper. So if one does happen, it's going to be a surprise, you know? So, yeah, I think he's been very, very good.
I totally agree. My only criticism of him is when it goes right up into his top corner, he flaps at it with both hands to knock it down rather than trying to push it out and over. and get it, you know, just concede the corner. So he's keeping the ball alive.
Sure.
But he's keeping the ball out. So
yeah, to be fair, that save that he made from the free kick in the first half, exactly where he did that was stunning. Yeah. That was a stunning
he
piece.
He does
of
cover
keeping.
His corners really, really well. Yeah. And I'll be on, be fair to him. I would say that 50% of the keepers in this league won't get to that.
I agree.
The other 50, if they do, they're probably doing exactly that. And they're prone for howlers as well, whereas it feels like, you know, as you say, Kudo doesn't feel like he's going to throw one in at some stage.
Which is quite nice. But he's made some good saves, and he's commanding his area very well. Obviously, the communication's fairly decent then with the back line to be able to command your area as well as he is. He's not at fault for the goals that we've been conceding at all. So, yeah, he's a good find, which makes that whole Marinovic thing quite interesting from this week. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Should we park that for a second and just finish off this game, and then we can talk some speculation?
Sure.
We've gone through that third game. Who do we think? Do we think that there was anyone who played badly in that game? Because I can't think of someone who played where I can point my finger at them and go, he's played badly. Even Doyle, I think he was unlucky twice.
He didn't play badly, but he has got unlucky.
He's got very unlucky twice.
Yeah, yeah, that sucks, man.
I genuinely have never conceded an own goal in my life, and so I don't know how it feels like, but I'm guessing it's not tremendous.
I think that makes him the leading own goal scorer for the Phoenix.
Which is saying something with Dura on the field.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. He's with three.
Dura's got more than that. He's prone for a slide and lapping it in the corner. So
I don't remember that. I don't remember him actually getting any own goals.
Yeah, he's done a few.
Dura?
Yeah.
You don't remember any?
No.
Boca Juniors?
He scored at the right end in that game.
And the wrong end?
Don't remember that one.
Okay, so you just don't remember them.
Yeah, I didn't say he hasn't. I genuinely don't remember.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got more than three for sure.
Yeah. That's right. Doyle's anti-highlight reel at the end of his career is going to be outstanding, isn't it? So his own goals and self-falcons.
Cheating on the Movember moustache is probably a faux pas as well.
Yeah, fair.
But again, can anyone think of someone that they went, actually, that guy played poorly?
By the same token, though, other than Curto, who played well?
No, I was getting to that. Yeah. That's basically, they all seem like they're playing okay. And the formation looked okay for a good part of that game. Yeah. So how does Rudan improve this?
I don't think it's a league that you can get away with just being okay anymore. I think you need a standout every game. I think that's the problem.
No,
I
totally agree.
I think 7-8 years ago, you could get away with almost probably winning the league by just being okay every week. That's not the case anymore. You need your imports, at least two or three of them, to be exceptional every game. And we don't look like we've got anyone doing that. We've got a bunch of guys going out there and being okay. And that gets you through one all at half time. Doesn't win you points, it seems.
So, speaking of that, do we need new players in January?
Yes.
Oh, definitely need new players in January. Yes.
And nice little lead in. Who's available?
Yes, but it's not the position that we need. So, Marinovic is available.
Yep.
Which is great. But Curto, again, is on a two-year contract. And
so it would cost us money.
It would cost us money, yep. And is playing well.
Yes.
We don't need to get rid of him. Marinovic, definitely a good pickup. I have no issues with that. But I don't think if he'd become available pre-season, I'd have said snap him up because excellent. If he becomes available at the end of Curto's contract, I'd say snap him up. But in the meantime, Curto's doing everything that's asked of him and doing it well. Why would you break that up? Apart from
how do you feel about starting him as a second keeper?
I would happily take him as a second keeper if he's prepared to sit on the bench to start with.
And that's the thing. Like, it would be on him. But I wouldn't mind us having a look and going, hey, if you're willing to come and ride the pine, but push for the first spot.
Wasn't it? It's like the 4-month trial. Basically, to the end of April, come in January, end of April, you can be here for 4 months and do yourself
the Monty Patterson.
Yeah,
I think it's
absolutely. He's of a quality that he probably should be picking up a first team spot somewhere. But if he's not, I would think it would be stupid of us not to be chatting to him about that spot, because I think he's more than good enough to be pushing for the first spot.
I agree.
And that pressure between two keepers is a thing we haven't really had particularly. You know, we've always
had,
we've had two good keepers. In many cases, they've been quite different. You know, the Lewis Moss style, where they were good in different areas, didn't really mean they were competing necessarily. It was whoever was on form or whoever they thought had the right, you know, mix for a certain opposition, largely. Whereas, you know, Moss Pasty was the last time we actually had two pretty similar keepers competing. And it was good.
Yeah, it was.
And, of course, there was the Instagram post that Mr. Marinovic...
of a phoenix,
of a flaming bird as yet unnamed.
No, it's definitely a phoenix. Whether he's making a reference to the Wellington phoenix or...
going to someplace phoenix in
rising.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even just... resurrecting something, you know, the phoenix is not just a connotation with us. I mean, we're called that for a reason.
It is a tenuous link, I agree, but there is a link. There is a link, if, no matter how tenuous. So, interesting.
Yeah. Well, I
what about Maya Bevan?
Yes. Now, this one, this interests me.
So, he's been released, so he's freely available now to sign.
My only question is, can he play through the middle? I think that he has played through the middle. My vague, dark recollections of him playing through the middle over in the islands, but I couldn't swear to it.
Mm.
And because that's, to me, where we need a striker, in the middle. If he's another wide striker, then we could sign him.
If he's in the middle, does he offer the skill set we need there? I think is the bigger question. I think even if he's all right in the middle, I think he's still in quite a similar mold to what we've got there. He's not like a switch to a Hamish Watson style, you know, big unit holding the ball up, you know, muscling off defenders. He's not that guy.
So you're advocating Hamish Watson?
I'm not, but I think if we're looking for strikers, we need someone that's in quite a different mold to what we've already got, rather than just tinkering around the edges of what we've already got, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, physically, he is very similar, and he's not going to be a guy that
he's a
plays back
He's, what, 18 years old, 19 years old?
But he isn't small. He's over 6 foot.
But he also has a lot of muscle he needs to put on his body to end up being that target man striker.
Yeah.
But it could be the sort of thing that I don't think he's ever going to be a target man. He's not a unit.
But that's kind of what we need, is the alternate option, isn't it?
Well, I think we need someone who can play through the middle and play short passes and can do that role of...
and hold the ball up to give you a chance to win those long balls that we seem to be pumping in all the time.
Even if it's providing an option behind that, you know, behind the wide strikers, and he's dropping back and playing like a false nine or whatever, then I think that that's an option. He doesn't have to be there as an old-fashioned English target man where he's ball to head. I think that there is that false nine option.
I think the thing going for him is that he's young and he's eager, which I like. That is a thing that you look at the strike force we've got up front. We've got experience. We don't necessarily have a guy who's just willing to go out there and do whatever needs to be done and just have a go. I think we're seeing a little bit of that from Burgess. I think he's young and that's quite good. I don't know what this hand signal you're making is.
Get your hands off the microphone.
Okay. I'm going to keep touching the microphone. I think he might just offer a little X factor there purely by being a bit unknown in the league and being young and just trying some dumb shit, which sometimes pays off. And we know all of the strike force we've got at the moment are very much confident strikers. And so just getting someone coming in and scoring a few might start to spark something there. But I don't know that in terms of skill set or any of that tactical kind of style stuff, he's necessarily going to be particularly different. But we've got free spaces in the squad. Why not?
I guess that's a key, isn't he? He's a Kiwi and he's a free spot. So
The only argument against it is if we are using those spots for something else. So I think it's purely an opportunity cost argument rather than anything else.
And I don't think we are, because we'd have already signed them, I'd say.
Come the January window, though.
I think the only thing
we'd be looking at is
marketing
two spots.
The only thing we'd be looking at would be import.
A guest
and
spot.
If we had the spot to use an import on, that's it, basically.
You bring an interesting point, like someone that's willing to try things. I mean, you saw that with Burgess. I thought that he came on with a sense of urgency and he tried things, and some of them did not work. Many of them did not work.
But he tried.
He tried them in their third, and I think that was the important thing. And he put in a bit of a shift, kicked a few people,
It's certainly not an argument you make in favour of trying new centre-backs. But up front, it is an argument you can make, right?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Trying a few new things and just seeing what happens isn't the worst thing up there.
Yeah. No, I think we saw some nice footwork from him, and he was really pushing. You could tell that he was really urgent. The same way that Burns sometimes does. He just gets the bit between his teeth and just goes, I'm going to try something. I'm going to take it on myself.
And Krishna, you see that sometimes as well. We haven't seen much of this season. Yeah. But you know, we have in the past. We know that sometimes he just goes, nah, screw this, I'm scoring a goal. And does.
Yeah.
But we're just not seeing that.
He's lost that spark. Mm. He has lost that spark.
Did you guys hear the Fox interview with him on the Fox podcast?
No, I didn't.
Basically, he said, after football, I'm going back to Fiji. Mm-hmm. So I think we can kiss his citizenship goodbye, because that's pretty much an important thing. And he certainly, his language implied that this is his last season here. Mm. He will not be staying.
It's interesting.
Yeah. It seemed quite obvious, you know, the way he talked. And I thought that was saddening, but I'm also sitting there like, if he's an import, he's not. We need the, you know, the 10, 12, 15 goal Krishna that we've seen, not the bottom of the street Krishna. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't think that he's been great this year. I think he's been below average, to say the least. And I don't think that he's been any better than a local player.
Do you think he was good last season?
No, I think there was extenuating. There was extenuating circumstances last season. Obviously, there was issues around, and this permeated the entire squad with the coaching issues. Yeah. And it seemed once that coaching issue was resolved, things got a lot better. But I still don't think he was good last year.
I think the best you could describe him is patchy.
Yeah.
He had some decent patches.
Yeah, but and I think those were after the coach left. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the coaching stuff affected all players. I don't know that he necessarily bounced back better than
anybody else.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But so I think basically the point I'm making is he arguably hasn't been good for 18 months.
Yeah, I totally agree.
As an import, that's not a great situation to be in.
We're also struggling with Burns as well. Not an import, but he hasn't been firing at all since he's come back.
To make the argument, though, of, you know, I think we probably need to be considering potentially dropping an import so we can pick up a better one in January. I don't know that I'd make the argument that Roy's the one to go, though. But there's definitely, now that you've raised it, it's a fair point.
Mm. Yeah, we need something to change up that top, because that top is not working.
Yeah, and I just don't see us picking up an Australian or a Kiwi who's going to solve it. I don't know who that would be.
I mean, and let's face it, the person who we had hoped would spark that creativity, Singh, is now no longer even on the bench. And I do understand why. It makes perfect sense to me that with that formation, Singh is definitely not the guy to do that. He's a guy that he has to be facing forward and be in between the lines.
Yes, he is a 10. That's in his creativity is best used when he can find that kind of space.
On the bench, though, there is an option to change it up.
I certainly think he's a better option than
Nichols. Because I agree in terms of starting lineup, but I find it hard to go, he's as good as he is, let's drop him entirely. We won't even have him as an option off the bench if we want to change something. Because it seems to me you might well have gone, oh, actually, let's play with a 10 now. Let's shuffle some stuff around.
Once we got that second goal, once we went down 2-1, bringing on a Singh in a 10 role is actually a really smart move.
But I think that it's basically between him and Burgess. Because Burgess is a 10 as well, and they play very, very similar. But Burgess
and Rodan likes Burgess.
Burgess is more physical, far more physical, and I think that that's very important if you're going to be doing a lot more work going backwards. Singh, you've got to provide him ball going forwards. And unfortunately, I don't think you can carry Singh and the three strikers we have. I'm not advocating dropping Singh, by the way. I am advocating dropping one of the three up front, because I don't think it works
at the moment
at all.
Yeah, I don't think none of them can honestly hold their hands up and say they're playing well. I think Williams is probably playing the best, but even he's not doing well.
But he doesn't play structured football. He's schoolyard football.
He likes it when it's broken, basically. All that broken type play is when he's at his best.
Yeah, his instincts are to run wild, not to play off his teammates. Mm. And it's still, I note that he doesn't make the same runs that everyone expects. And he certainly, I don't know where the hell he's going to be. And I don't think any of his teammates do either. Mm. And let's face it, we know that on his day, he can be very destructive. But
he hasn't had his day yet.
Well, no, it's the way we're playing with that very structured defensive style. We need to link up with passes. And I don't think he's the guy for it. The problem is, I don't think Burns is either. And I don't think Krishna's in form for it.
Krishna can be the guy, but he's not in form. Burns can be the guy, but he's not in form.
But Burns hasn't been the guy for nearly 3 years.
Agreed.
So I don't think he's the guy.
No, I think he can be the guy, but he's not in form. But he hasn't been in form for a long time. I totally agree.
Yeah, but
if he is in form, he can be that guy.
What's the tipping point between form and past it, though?
That is a really good question.
That is totally my point. It's three seasons, a long time past a long time.
He's been here for an entire year now. Well, he's came in January, right? And he's been here for 11 months, and he hasn't scored a goal in that period of time. I don't know if he's even got an assist. Maybe
has
a couple.
Has he really looked like scoring a goal?
Well, he has looked like, he did. End of last season, there was a few games where he genuinely looked like he could and got unlucky.
I remember some times he should have scored a goal, but he didn't.
He was unlucky when, saved onto the crossbar and stuff like that, and he would have got one, but Krishna nicked it and that kind of stuff. But I agree, there should be some production in there. We should probably move on to something else.
I was about to.
There's a lot more to talk about. We spent a lot of time on this. I remember about 20 minutes ago, you tried to segue off this and Frosty wouldn't let you, so it's all his fault.
Yep.
Terrible host.
You're welcome, Pat.
We could ignore the rest of the round and just move straight on to Perth.
Well, no, let's quickly cover the rest of the round.
Okay, so on Friday night, the Newcastle Jets got up 2-0 over the Western Sydney Wanderers. And the goals were scored by Hoffman and Vargas. Then, of course, we lost Adelaide. Next was Brisbane Roar, surprisingly, actually, getting up 2-0 over Melbourne City. Taggart with both the goals there. And then we had the Big Blue, Sydney going down 2-1 to Victory. All the goals being scored by imports there, with Lafondra scoring for Sydney and Toivonen and Honda scoring for
the
Victory. What
did you guys pick in that game?
I had Victory winning that one.
Had Victory winning.
I think I had Sydney winning.
Yeah, you definitely did.
Yeah,
I think I was the only one who said Victory might win that, probably by one goal.
Yeah, I only picked Sydney because they're at home, so yeah. Then we had the Glory getting up 3-2 over Central Coast Mariners with a 95th minute winner. It's to Economidis. It was his second of the game. Lowry got the other one for them, and there was an own goal for the Mariners, and O'Neill scored as well.
For me, there's two things out of this whole round that I find interesting. I mean, obviously the Newcastle Jets getting back to doing what they should be doing is great. But the Roar, there's rumours out of Melbourne City that Warren Joyce is starting to piss people off, specifically Fornaroli. He benched him, and Fornaroli said, "No thanks, I'll take the week off," because of his basically benched him because his skin folds weren't good enough. And it sounds like there's some ructions over there. So interesting that they got beaten.
I'm literally reading right now that the Melburnians are going to be protesting at the next home game. They're going to not sing for the first 23 minutes in protest of Fornaroli being dropped.
Wow. How will you notice the difference?
Yeah, I know. That's the joke people are making in direct response.
All right. I was thinking it's original.
The implications around that seem to be that it's obviously nothing to do with skin fold tests, because that's just silly, and that it's actually because Fornaroli's got the hump that they wouldn't let him leave. He wanted to move to another club. The rumours are it was Sydney. They didn't let him. And now he's kind of getting punished for getting the hump with the coach about not letting him go. So it seems fascinating to me that your key striker is being, basically dropped, and the fans are protesting, supporting him, and he's only been dropped because he wanted to leave. Seems like a fascinating scenario that I look forward to watching play out. But
it would have been nice if they had managed to start this before we played them.
That would have been good.
All that's conjecture and rumour. I assume the truth's hiding somewhere in there, and it sounds like fun to watch.
Should we go through the table?
Well, let's just touch on Perth sneaking past Central Coast. No one picked this.
No,
we thought it was going to be fun times.
No, we did. Yep. We did pick Perth winning, but I picked them. I thought it was going to be like 4 or 5 goal line. So, it was quite a surprise.
So,
Do we think Perth were bad or Mariners were good?
Didn't see it. But if you're winning in the 95th minute, it means you're pulling something out, which is good.
Yep.
But the fact that you conceded 2 to the Mariners, who haven't really been scoring a tremendous amount.
I think the Mariners really stepped up. I didn't see this whole game because I was doing other things, but I had it on in the background. And it looked like a very different Mariners side. It looked like they had come to play. And obviously did. I think Perth still looked good, and that's why they, pulled it together and scraped it at the end there. But they definitely were worried. But I would put this down a lot to the Mariners having a really good game, more than Perth taking the foot off the pedal, because they really wanted it and they fought for it and they got it. And I think that was a sign that they're still there and still playing good football. But they got a scare. and they won't get a scare against us this weekend.
That does leave Perth at the top of the table as the only unbeaten team. They are 4 points clear of the victory. Sydney come next with Adelaide, City, Brisbane rounding out the top six. Then Resurgent Jets, Western Sydney, us, and the Central Coast Mariners. So obviously we move on. Perth going to come here this week. They are the highest scoring team in the league, and we are the lowest scoring team in the league with the second worst defence.
Good.
Yeah. So the only team who has scored has conceded more than us, Central Coast Mariners, who are sitting 10th.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a 7 p.m. kickoff on a Sunday. The weather's meant to be pretty trash.
Not supposed to be raining then, though.
It's meant to be warm, but overcast and probably windy.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to win.
Yeah.
I think all signs point to us getting absolutely bloody humped, so this will be the one we win.
Yeah, that would be the Phoenix way, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Of course, you have ruined it by calling.
No. The problem is that the club have ruined it by saying they're going to give us free pizza if we win. And as I saw that, I'm like, oh, no, that means we can't win anymore now.
That's what jinxed Burns.
Yeah, the Burns curse.
Well, to be fair, we're already jinxed. So now we
can't get our free pizzas, and it's going to be very disappointing because I genuinely was looking at this going, oh, we're no chance here. There's going to be 3,000 people there. Oh, wait, no, that means we'll probably win this.
Sure, it's the same thing happened last year after the Peru game, sorry. We played Perth the next day, and no one thought we were going to get near it. All the focus was on the day before, and we smashed them 5-2. Yeah, which was completely out of the blue and really unexpected. So
I've still never seen that game.
Oh, really? No, you were flying out to Peru, weren't you?
Yeah, well, the game kicked off as I was sitting in Auckland Airport, and then we were on a flight, and I never saw anything because when I got home, 4 weeks later or whatever, it didn't matter anymore.
Perhaps you should do that for this game.
Should we call a prediction?
I'm predicting 4-1 to Perth.
I was going to say exactly that.
Yeah.
I was going to say 4-2, and then there's no way we were scoring 2.
Have some ambition, lads. Phoenix, 1-0.
How is that ambitious?
Because as you've explained, we are the worst defence in the league. They're the top scorers in the league. And
we're not the second worst defence.
So I'm sticking with it being very ambitious to call us even scoring a goal.
No, I think we'll
score. Scoring the only goal.
Yeah. Okay, fair. Full. Nice. I'm impressed. I'm impressed you've gone with that. I genuinely don't think it's going to happen.
I mean, you can check out what I actually tip on the forums later.
So, should we push on to the white jerseys over the yellow and blacks? We've had some pretty good results of late. The women and the, what did Sarah Gregorius call them?
The Fernies.
Young Fernies.
The Fernies, yeah.
Have done superbly well. Unfortunately, losing to Spain in the World Cup Under-17 semi-final.
Yep.
Which...
The key word you've already said there, mate, is semi-final.
Yeah.
The fact that they've come through what was a tough group with Uruguay and Ghana, I'd say Finland were the team that they were going to beat in that if they were going to win one. The fact that they did manage to get up over Uruguay and they put in a solid performance against Ghana as well. And then to knock over Japan in the quarterfinals on penalties was a phenomenal result. And actually that goal was brilliant. That goal was exceptionally good that they scored in that game.
And Annelite stepping up as the goalkeeper, saving one and stepping up and taking the final penalty is...
What a good save as well. I mean, I'm a keeper. Yeah, that was a really good save.
Yeah, that was because that was a nice penalty. There was nothing wrong with that penalty. And you got to give the keeper credit if they managed to get the hands of that one. So the fact that today they didn't get up, they more than held their own from... didn't get to see the game, unfortunately, because of the time. But all the reports that I read, they should have been proud of the performance they put in against Spain. Spain... were the better team, and that's sometimes a better team is always going to win. So, but they weren't outclassed by any stretch of the imagination.
No, we certainly didn't look the better side, but we looked like a side that could have nicked it. I mean, until we were one goal down, we probably had the best chance in many ways. We hit the crossbar, and it was just a tiny touch from the keeper to put it onto the crossbar. It could easily have gone in and might have been quite a different game. But even a goal down still looked like we were in it. Second goal kind of put it to bed. It was a very good volley from the top of the box, the second goal. But we still looked competitive for the whole 90 minutes against a very good side. And I think they can definitely be proud of that in a World Cup semi-final. I mean, what more could we ask?
Well, the more we could ask would be pulling out a goal, a bronze medal in the third, fourth playoff, and that I believe is against Germany, who were beaten by Canada.
No, Canada, who were beaten by Mexico.
Oh, sorry, was it?
Canada beat Germany in the quarters.
Sorry.
Mexico won that 1-0. to the final will be between Spain and Mexico. Those,
unless I'm mistaken, all four semi-finalists have not won this tournament before. I think there was
correct.
So I think North Korea and Japan have been particularly strong at that level.
So have Spain.
Okay.
Spain has finished third twice, they finished third in the last tournament. Yep. Finished second in the tournament prior to that, but they've never won it. They're the only team in the Final Four that had been to the Final Four before.
Yeah, and so I think there's an argument that our side of the knockouts was actually very strong, because Spain beat North Korea, who have been very good at that level. We beat Japan, yep, who have won a lot of them at that level.
Yep.
So we were probably on the harder half of that draw.
Yep.
So going Germany, up against Spain is unlucky.
Germany is quite a strong nation in women's football as well. Canada's not exactly a chumps, so that's on the level, on the age group level.
Yep.
It does tend to be those Asian countries are stronger, so yeah, it's honestly, mate, fantastic if they get third. Obviously, it's brilliant if they get third, but there's no pressure on them to do so.
No,
if they can just go out and just play whatever football they can play to the best of their ability, and whatever happens, happens, because they have exceeded any expectation by a country mile. They're the only team, New Zealand team, that's ever made a quarter final. Let alone making a semi-final.
Yeah, do we see any other teams ever making a semi in a?
I wouldn't say ever with the new format that's going to come in the full World Cup with the 48 team tournament. I wouldn't say ever, because that's, you can finish second in your group and get lucky in your second round match and you can get through to a quarterfinal. So
semi. That's what we're talking.
He asked about semis. Oh, it's weird that you've gone straight to the full men's World Cup as a chance to make a semi final.
Yeah. I
definitely think at age group tournaments we're a chance. I think this is the thing that will happen again, probably in my lifetime, but it's going to be very rare, and it's no easy ask. Even at those age group tournaments, some people seem to think that those tournaments are it's only second tier nations or whatever, but it's really not. Those are high quality football, so it's a huge achievement. And it's not going to be commonplace for New Zealand at any point.
Any team that gets that far needs to have some luck along the way. Even the good nations still need to have some luck along the way to get there. So,
what are you talking
possible.
About? You just have to, get through your group and then a good draw in the second round, apparently.
Yeah. if you're a 48-team World Cup, maybe, yeah. But, I don't know, mate. I don't even want to compare it, really. I just think we just need to enjoy what it is, and if it happens again in the future, fantastic. But they can hold their heads up high for the performances that they put out there and doing everyone proud, really.
Yeah, we should probably pick out a couple of people. We've obviously mentioned Anna Leet. There is the centre-back, the captain.
Dorf?
Yes,
Mindendorf. Yeah.
She's had big reps on her. I've only seen one of the group round games, and she was solid, really, really solid. Just gave off an air of calmness, I think, which is really key to what they were doing. Yeah. Brown, I think, hit a couple from outside and looked dangerous. It's interesting that we're starting to see the women's game develop quite early, especially compared to the boys. We don't tend to see a lot of carryover between. Like, I can see a few of these girls going into towards the senior team.
Well, there definitely is a transition there already, and we've seen it happen with people like Paige Satchel and
Elite's Rolo. Already in there, isn't she?
Yeah, Rolo's gone up. CJ Bott, to name some names that I know, these guys have all been through that setup and all been through those teams, and they're now representing at the full level. And so the pathway is there, and it's already very well trodden with players moving up through those ranks. So I can see definitely a lot of those players in 5 years' time, or maybe after the Olympics cycle. Well, no, the Olympics is full women's teams, isn't it? Not just the under 23s. So yeah, I can see them in 5 years' time. Quite a few of them being in and around that.
And I think the really good thing as well is seeing how many of those players are still locally based here playing club football in New Zealand. These are players who are still based here, and you can go down and watch them on a Saturday in winter. And it's great to see that's where we're developing this talent. This isn't like on the men's side, where even in those age groups teams, you're often seeing a lot of players are already over at colleges in the US and that kind of stuff. This is a very young, very local team doing very well on the world stage. That's phenomenal. And it has to be good for even the players who don't necessarily make the step up to the full ferns in the next few years, that they're still going to be playing club football in New Zealand. That's just going to keep bringing the level up here more and more. That's great to see.
So speaking of the senior team, they're playing in the islands, the OFC Women's Nations Cup. Latest result was an 8-0 win over New Caledonia. I believe it was a 10-0 win before that.
Against Fiji. Yep. I think it was a 6-0 win. I can't remember. Cook Islands. And there was a 11-0 win against Tonga. They've got, that was the semi-final, the New Caledonia result. So the final is against Fiji, who they met in their group. And that will be on, I want to say, Saturday New Zealand time. But I can't be sure, so please do check.
But safe to say that they are easily a class above, conceding no goals, almost getting double figures every game.
They're doing what they have to do, though. So,
well, they're doing it, by the sound of it, very professionally as well.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And so they go, you can only beat what's put in front of you. They're beating them well. They're playing good football. They're using it as a development opportunity, but they're getting the results they need to get them to the World Cup, and that's all you can ask of them.
Yep. Unfortunately, it's not much else you can say to that, despite the fact that they're doing so well. It's just like, well, yes, it is slightly expected, but they're doing it exactly as you could hope.
And you look at how the men have struggled over in those Nation Cup games.
Very true.
It's not easy conditions, and we've, you know, the men's side should be doing exactly what these women are doing, but we've seen the men struggle to do it. So it's full credit to them that they're going over and they're actually doing the job.
To be fair, there is a larger gap. Larger disparity between the New Zealand
the rankings, yes,
women's and well, yep. Not just the rankings. That like a lot of the New Zealand women are full professionals. Yep. In fact, most of them probably are. Any that aren't have been through semi-professional setups in college. And I would say that there are very few of the island women who have been. So I think
the same argument when you're talking professional can be made on the men's side as well. But the gap in rankings, I think, is the real difference. Where the women's New Zealand side are ranked actually quite well. Even our men's side is not necessarily ranked that well, but we should still be going over and beating them. But the quality of the professionals we have compared to what they have in their sides is still a big gulf on both sides of the coin.
Actually, what you have to look at this point in time with women's football on the islands is it's fantastic that these women have got that opportunity to play for their countries at this level, because, and say, women don't necessarily have the best opportunities in life over there at this point in time outside in all walks of life. So the fact that they're putting these teams out and they're performing and they're doing their countries proud as well, so good on them.
So that kind of leads us on back to domestic football and the Handy Prem.
Yeah, so good results for T-Dubs over the weekend.
Solid result.
I haven't seen the game I wanted to watch on TV, but unfortunately my one-year-old was in charge of the remote on Sunday, not me, apparently. So that didn't happen.
You are disappointing me, Cameron.
Yeah. Yeah, if it wasn't the one-year-old, it was going to be the four-year-old. So either way, I was losing out. There was no football going to be watched.
So I haven't seen this game either, but I did see Wenix against Auckland, which was a good game, but Auckland dominant as you'd expect them to be.
I heard the Wenix were a little unlucky to lose 3-0. But.
I think they had a patch where they probably deserved to concede three goals. There were other parts where they looked very competitive, though, and they had put out a reasonably full professional set there. You had Singh, you had Lowry and...
Lowry or Fox? Because Lowry played on the weekend.
Ooh. I thought Lowry was out there, but...
Lowry wasn't out there.
I assume it was Fox.
Run through the team.
The three professionals they had out there were very strong.
So they had Sale,
second guessing it now.
Kikache.
Yeah. Oh, Libby, yes.
Yeah, and Singh. And Louis Fenton played as well. Yeah, that would be the only the only full professionals other than that. But looking at their team is quite good. They've just got Liam Moore, they've got Calvin Harris and Ben Wayne played. The two new signings that have come over from Australia were both playing as well. So there's some decent players in that time. Will Ebbinge was on as well. Callan Elliott played. Ruben Way played. So that's a pretty good side. Yeah, that's a very, very good side.
Yeah, shame they went down 3-0, but again, Auckland City.
Way is who I'm thinking of, by the way.
Yeah.
In my head, I've swapped him and Lowry.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Do you want me to get to the other results?
Well, can I just touch on the T-Dubs game? I believe Mr. Watson was on form again.
Yeah, he was. So he opened the scoring in the 12th minute. Andre de Jong levelled in the 19th, and then Watto slotted home from a pen in the 24th, which makes him, as far as I can see...
Well, he already was golden boot going into the game. Surely scoring another two holds on to that spot pretty comfortably for you.
Interesting that he's taking the pens too, because I don't remember him being a great penalty taker. Even back in his Hawke's Bay days.
To be fair, I don't remember him taking. I don't remember seeing him take a penalty. That doesn't mean he hasn't taken them. But the Knicks, for example, he wasn't the senior striker, so he's never going to get that opportunity. So it's not likely to.
He's slotted this penalty pretty well as well. It didn't ever look in doubt.
Yeah, nice. So I'm not going to question the ability there. It's just purely because I haven't seen
it. Could solve two problems for the Knicks. We don't have anyone that takes penalties either.
Are you really having that hot take?
I think someone's already brought it up on the forums.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, really? Have they?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I only ever bring it up
tongue in cheek. Oh, who is this guy? Maybe we should have a look at him.
I think that's seven. Might be seven goals he scored this season.
It's at least six.
I'm pretty sure he had five when they played at home against.
And how many
Hawke's
rounds
Bay.
Is that? Seven from six?
7 games we played. Did he score against Hawke's Bay?
I thought he did.
If he scored against Hawke's Bay, then that's possibly 8 he's got now in 7 games, which
he
is
definitely had 4
return.
Before this game. Yeah. And that was a couple of weeks ago. But
this is great, though. He needs to be hitting those straps going into the Club World Cup. That's exactly what he needs to do, because if he's not getting a lot of opportunity, but if he's taking the opportunities that he gets, then that bodes very well for them getting a win. They need to get that first win. So
what does the table look like, Cam?
So Auckland City's on top with 18 points, played one less game than T-Dubs. T-Dubs are second on 16 points. Easts are third on 12 points. They're played one less game now, but because we beat them, we would be ahead of them even if they won that extra game
because of points.
Wanderers are the surprise package, sitting currently in fourth on 10 points. Canberra United in fifth. Southern United only played 5 games because of their washed out game with Auckland. They're sitting on 7 points. So if they happen to win one of the 2 games and they've got in hand, then they could actually end up in the top 4, which would be fantastic for Southern if they manage that. Waitak is also on 7 points, Hawke's Bay on 5, Tasman on 3, and the Weenix on a duck egg.
Yeah, it's a shame. I thought the Weenix are better this season than they have been from what I've seen of them.
Certainly, when I watched them, the two games I've seen, they were unlucky to lose. They were outplayed as well against
Waitak.
Yeah, Waitak definitely outplayed them, but they were really unlucky to lose 3-2 to Canterbury, and there was also the previous week, I think, where they lost 3-2 to somebody as well.
Is it Southern?
No, they've got Southern this weekend.
So they have genuinely been unlucky.
It was 2 games in a row where they were up 2-0 and biffed it away 3-2. One was Canterbury. I can't think who the other was.
Yeah, it eludes me right now, to be honest. But yeah, so I agree with you, mate. It's they're putting out nice, strong teams. Tasman. Mm. Yeah, the previous week away to Tasman. So putting out strong teams, the kids obviously have ability. You have to also question what they're trying to achieve in these games. Are they going to try and match the seniors formation? Does Rudan have specific things he wants the coaching staff to achieve that might not necessarily aid in getting a result, for example? But I don't know. All questions to be asked to those higher up down in the next chain than us.
Yeah, so. Well, it's an interesting question that I've seen brought up on the forums again, where people are suggesting this, it's the National League. Should we be allowing a development outfit in there who are only viewing it as development? And I can see their argument. You should have, it's the National League. Every team out there should be trying to win these games. But as a Knicks fan, it's hard to argue that winning is the most important thing for them to get out of that game. I think they'll be happy with other elements of what's been worked on there. But as the governing body, should you be happy with a team who are not going out there to win?
They have the same debate in Italy.
Absolutely.
It's fair to say, and Serie A, it's some of the teams. They've been invited to put in development in junior teams. I think only Juve has. I might be wrong, but it's the same kind of thing. Pro football leagues, should we be doing that?
But it's not the top divisions they're playing in, whereas this is our top division.
Well, no, they still could qualify. That's the thing, is that
they couldn't play there if their senior team was in the same division.
This is Italy, bro.
It's like the same thing happens in Spain. Real Madrid have a second team that play in the second tier in Segunda Liga, but they can never get up to the top league because their team doesn't get relegated. So you can't have two teams from the same club playing in the same division. You just can't.
Italy.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Just to clarify, Hamish Watson has 7 goals.
7, yeah.
Yep.
From 7 games.
Seven games.
It's a good return. Yeah. And speaking of returns, someone who won't be returning to his US club.
Nice segue, son.
You're welcome.
I thought you were leading into something about Patrick.
Well, who knows?
Big announcement from the host there.
Someone that won't be returning is Kip Colby. He's decided to announce his retirement at the ripe old age of 24. Feels like having been released from his club and not really making it in the MLS, just being feeders, he felt that if you kept chasing that, he wasn't really guaranteed to be anything, and so decided to hang his boots up.
That's fair. He's obviously a smart kid because he's moving into a medical field. I don't know exactly which one, but he would be going to study. So he's
come through the US college circuit, hasn't he? So yeah, he has probably a reasonable education on him.
Exactly. Yep. So I can understand from a futures perspective, when he's got something else he's obviously good enough to do and perhaps better at than football, then why he wouldn't choose that opportunity.
Well,
I get it.
The Timmy Brown role model.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, and when you start up one, I think, to be fair, he's an outlier starting a $2 billion business, but, you know, it's still a good role model to have.
God forbid we should ask whether he wants to buy a football team. He could afford it.
Yeah,
well, no, nice he could. It's nice the company, but, you know.
It'd be nice if he could invest in the football team, wouldn't it?
I imagine he's got enough shares, he could probably afford it.
I would say, yeah. See if he wants to sponsor a podcast.
I'd do it for a free pair of shoes.
I'm already wearing his product.
So I think that's it for tonight. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again. Bye.
Bye.
Host is dead. Long live the host. Brings you.
The host can Skype in from Europe. Brings you.
Milan City brings you.
The Paolo Maldini Memorial Tour brings you.
He's a long way from dead, bro.
Oggy, oggy, oggy. Oi, oi, oi. Brings you.
That's what you get for cheating in Movember. Brings you.
You can just edit this out, Pat. That'd be great. Seamless production.